G-I-R-L-S-C-A-M-P, it's Girls Camp.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Girls Camp Podcast. It's your host, Haley Rawl, here today with a really, really intriguing interview with my friend Evelyn. Evelyn is a post-fundamental Catholic, and she talks about her experience being a very, very fundamental Catholic. She gives Mormonism a run for their money. I guess fundamental Catholicism gives Mormonism a run for our money is a better way of putting it. I was really blown away. I did not realize how fundamental Catholicism can get, and Evelyn was deep in it. A big piece of her story is going to a deeply conservative religious university, which I know many of us Mormons, post-Mormons can relate to, and she talks about how she essentially got intimidated out of that university. The whole thing is really crazy. It makes for a phenomenal story, and I can't wait for you to hear it. I have a little announcement, a campfire chat piece of news, which is that Girls Camp is officially signed with a podcasting network. I'm so excited. This has been a very long time coming. As you know, I've talked about it quite a bit on here. I decided to sign with a boutique podcasting network called 58 Ember. I really love them. I did a lot of shopping around and did a lot of soul searching as to what exactly I wanted and had a few options. I'm really glad I decided on 58 Ember because they are a boutique network, which I really love. There's a lot more hands-on-ness. Also, I work with a lot of really lovely women, which I love working with women, and I've just enjoyed my experience so far. And can't wait to be officially launched with 58 Ember. There really is a lot that goes on behind the scenes of podcasting, just a lot of work. And to have a team behind me now, I just cannot tell you how good it feels, how excited I am to just keep leaning into Girls Camp. I'm so excited. I can't believe I'm here. I just feel really, really lucky. And I want to thank you if you're listening for being a part of it. It just means the world that I get to do this. So thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting me. And here is today's interview with Evelyn. Welcome, Evelyn.
Thank you.
To Girls Camp.
I'm glad this finally worked out.
I know. I feel like we've been trying to coordinate it. And I'm actually glad for the timing because when we were first talking, I think you were still at Franciscan.
I was still at Franciscan.
Yes.
And I was like, I don't want to do this episode because I have so much I want to say that I like can't say right now.
Yes. And now it's no holds barred.
Exactly.
All the info on the table. You are the first person that I've talked to on the podcast with a background in fundamental Catholicism.
Yes.
Which I'm so excited to get into because I have a lot of people, a lot of listeners who are from a Catholic background. Mm-hmm. I did talk to my friend Kylie, and she was kind of an Easter Christmas Catholic.
Right.
Which was not your case.
No.
Much different. And I'm excited to talk about your story because I think it's a very fascinating story and to get into all of the things that come with being in a fundamental Catholic space mm-hmm. and then deconstructing that. You have so many wonderful things to say about it. So I'm excited to get into it. Okay, let's start at the beginning. If you can just tell me about your upbringing yeah. and where religion played into your upbringing.
For sure. So my family is Catholic, but like you were saying, like Christmas, Easter Catholic, like not that into it, which honestly like is so much more of a healthy way to approach it, I feel like, now. Yeah, so they raised me that way. Like, I was baptized, had my sacraments, whatever, went to Catholic school. But I literally just went to Catholic school because it was the private school in the area, like, not really for any kind of reason. So I was living in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And then we moved to Texas when I was in fifth or sixth grade. And the church that I got involved with there, like, my mom thought it was really important for us to go to, like, youth group to just, like, have the community and kind of, like, some kind of spiritual formation. But I think what she was raised with was just, like, not the kind of youth group that I ended up then going to when yeah. we moved to Texas.
Yeah.
That's where I started to get exposed to, like, the fundamentalist Catholicism. But I don't even think, like, my family had a concept of what I was being exposed to because they would go to like mass sometimes, but they're not there were like adult, like small groups and like adult Bible studies and stuff like that, but they weren't doing like the extra things. And I was doing all of the extra things because everything was just like felt super unstable at home for me growing up. Mm. And so to like have these like things that I could go do, like I didn't have a ton of freedom to go like hang out with friends very much or whatever, but I could always go to church things. So I could like go to youth group and go to Bible studies. And I got involved in like anything I could get my hands on because it was like time to spend outside of the house. And it was like structure and like unconditional love that I needed.
Gotcha.
So
there was the social aspect, yeah, the stability that maybe exactly. You didn't sense otherwise.
Yeah.
Forgive my ignorance, but I'm curious to hear more about just, I guess, the general experience of Catholicism with what you're saying, how, you know, you could go to mass occasionally and that could maybe be a very different experience than going right. to a Bible group. Is there yeah. a difference between Bible groups? Like how could you even spot the fundamentalist leaning, right. you know?
The thing about Catholicism, like the word Catholic means universal. So it's supposed to be like a universal church, a universal experience. And so if you go to mass, I mean, there are like variations in some small ways. But for the most part, if you're going to a mass anywhere, like I went to masses when I was studying abroad that weren't even in English and I can follow it because it's like the same structure and the same routine. You wouldn't even really probably get exposed to that much. Like, I think it would be very hard to be exposed to fundamentalism if the only thing you were involved in was going to mass. But that's also the only thing you, like, really have to do as a Catholic. Like, to be a Catholic in good standing, you have to go to church on Sundays. Like, you have to receive the Eucharist, which is, like, the sacrament.
Yeah.
And you have to go to confession, like, once a year is the minimum to be in good standing. But, like, if you have, like, mortal sin, then you have to go
taken care of.
But like other, like you're not required to be involved in like outside groups. That's just like stuff that some churches offer. And I feel like that is where the fundamentalism gets involved, is in like the community if you're at a parish that's like that.
Got it. And that yeah. can differ by parishes. So right. you could be in one parish, go to Bible group, and it's not going to have that fundamentalist right. leaning and content. Mm-hmm. Interesting. That feels tricky because it feels like it'd be really hard to avoid that if that's not what yeah. you want, you know?
I feel like, so I always thought when we had first moved to Texas that the reason why that church was fundamentalist, and I wouldn't have said fundamentalist at the time, I would have said like, it's like kind of evangelical, but like it's fun, like it's a good vibe. But I always thought that aspect of that church was because it was in the South and like in the Bible Belt, and I thought it was just kind of influenced by that culture. But then I came to realize that it's a part of like, so in Catholicism, there was this thing called the Charismatic Renewal, which was like very evangelical vibes. And it was mainly in the church in America. And then from that, there were these things that were formed called covenant communities. And they're like these little Catholic culty groups. And then some of these covenant communities branched off and like merged with evangelical communities.
Interesting.
And just like this very weird like pseudo-Catholicism with lots of evangelical flavor. And
interesting.
The school that I was going to was formed by a covenant community. Like a covenant community took the school over and they started these youth conferences across the whole entire country with this like flavor of Catholicism. Mm-hmm. And I started a youth ministry program. Yeah.
So interesting. I mean, this is another conversation entirely, and I'm sure we'll get into this along the course of your story. But I'm just thinking as you're talking, when I think of Catholicism, I'm picturing mass. I'm picturing right. something very, I would describe it as kind of stoic, kind of somber, yeah. very ritualistic, as you just mm-hmm. said. And I mean, this is coming from someone who has very little experience yeah. with Catholicism. But it's interesting when you think about comparing that to evangelicalism.
Yeah.
What even is that
word? Evangelical church?
Yeah, there you go. Because that immediately brings to mind singing, yes. speaking tongues, a lot more kind of loud and fun and exciting. Yeah. And I think that that brand of Christianity, you can see how that could lean more fundamental.
Right.
So it's interesting that Catholicism has that through that overlap as well.
Yeah. And it's really only like, I mean, I guess I'm generalizing, like it exists in other parts of the world, but like it primarily has its roots in America and like that overlap with the evangelical church in America. I think even like what my like family enjoyed about going to this church in Texas is like there was like a good vibe with like guitars and like good singers and stuff.
A little more entertaining.
A little more entertaining.
Yeah.
There also was just this sense of like, I don't think the music is the problem. It's the underlying tones of like, well, we're actually the ones that are like more filled with the Holy Spirit because we are in tune with this charismatic side of things.
Gotcha.
So
interesting. Yeah. One other thing I want to ask before we get back to the timeline is, can you clarify exactly what you're talking about when you're saying fundamental Catholicism as maybe compared to just general Catholicism?
I think it's tricky because, I don't know, when you're looking at like Mormonism or something like that, like it's very enshrined into just like the church as a whole.
Yes.
And then when you're looking at Catholicism, it's not even necessarily a part of the doctrine that makes it fundamentalism. It's like the communities of it.
Yeah.
I like to look at the aspects of like high control groups and how that can be applied to a religious community. So like controlling thoughts, controlling information, controlling social relationships, things like that, that were present in, or like messages that were present in fundamentalist communities that I've been a part of, where they really do just try to control so many aspects of your life.
And they're using the Catholicism kind of as the justification,
right,
or they're pulling doctrines that fit that more controlling
dynamic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So thank you for explaining all of that. So interesting. You are in Texas at this point. You are really leaning into the church stuff. So you're going to Bible study, you said.
Yes.
Are you in youth ministry at that point?
Yeah. They had like a middle school youth group.
Got it.
I loved it as a kid. You're getting to go hang out with all these people your age. It was a good vibe. And I feel like, I don't know, that's been something I've been working on, like balancing more, is recognizing like how much of a positive thing it was for me at that time in my life, because I really was like struggling with my mental health, and it really was a really good thing for me at that time.
Yeah, kind of a safe haven. Yeah. Did that last all through high school? Like what were the rest of those years like?
So we moved back to Wisconsin. It was my freshman year of high school. And that was a really hard time for me because I had like struggled with the move to Texas, being away from all of my extended family, all my friends I'd had, because we'd moved around like within Wisconsin, but because I went to private school, like I was still going to the same school for the most part, so I had the same friends. And then like middle school is just a hard time anyway.
Such a hard time.
And I was just like starting over. I know. And so it's like freshman year of high school, like completely starting over in rural Wisconsin. Yeah, I was just like going through it, and I was removed from my church community. That was like the year that I was definitely like all of my mental health stuff kind of came to a head. I got very close to like ending my own life at one point that year. And what stopped me in that moment, this is like, it's so toxic, but it like also was like the thing that was helpful, was like knowing that I supposedly wouldn't go to heaven if I took my own life. That was like the moment I think that I really like doubled down and committed. I was like sitting there and I was like, I'm just going to like pray a prayer one more time. And I did like the Lord's Prayer or whatever. And at the part where it says, thy will be done. Everything is awful in my life, but I know God's will isn't for me to like die right now.
Because it would have been your will, not God's.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's huge. It's, I mean, you said it so succinctly, but that just impacted me so much. The thing that you now view as really toxic, this doctrine that you would have gone to hell if you had died by suicide,
right,
did save you
it
in
did.
That moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That seems like a really complicated thing to reckon with now.
It is. It's such a like double-edged sword, because it's like that is so toxic, I think, especially for the people who are left behind when someone they know dies by suicide and they have to grapple with the fact that they might not ever see them again and like they're suffering in hell.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, I mean, whatever it takes to like
keep you alive.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, totally.
So yeah, that was a crazy, crazy year of my life. So my parents didn't even know about that when all that went down. And they found out about it later from my search history that they found on my computer. So then we ended up moving back to Texas, like in a large part because of how much I was struggling with my mental health. being back in Wisconsin and just like being so removed from that community. But when we moved back, now everyone started high school. Everyone has like started their own friend groups again. And I like once again was on the outside of like
everything. The community at school.
Yeah. So going back, there's like even more things I'm able to get involved in that church in high school. That was my full whole life. Also, actually, this is such a fun little tidbit for the podcast. Please. I started doing like Catholic social media influencing at this time. And it was because I had a friend who was doing Mormon social media influencing.
Really?
And I was like, I could do that, but like right, because it'll be Catholic.
You're like, well, okay, good for you, but Mormonism is not true.
Right.
The Catholic churches. So here I go.
Yeah.
Wait, that's so interesting. That's pretty young to be doing social media influencing for a church. I'm even surprised you had a friend doing it for the Mormon church. That's interesting to me.
Yeah. So I was doing that.
Wow. So very, very entrenched.
Very deep in it.
Yeah. In every aspect, it sounds like. Even the online aspect of it just all seemed to center around this Catholic community.
Yeah.
I want to hear more about how you related in those years to the doctrines of the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
You mentioned, you know, before you decided to not make a suicide attempt, it seems like it was a very doctrinal, very, you know, belief-driven thing for you. Mm-hmm. What was it like living those beliefs? How did you relate to the beliefs of the church?
Now I know that I had some OCD going on there. So definitely was just very black and white about everything, taking everything more intensely than sometimes like my faith community was. I was digging up doctrines from like the 1800s saying like you have to only wear skirts. And like it's literally not even the teaching of the Catholic Church anymore, but also they never
disavowed it.
So it's like directly, it exists. Yeah. And so we have to do this or like we're going to go to hell.
So were you wearing skirts?
I was like only wearing skirts. I think it was like my sophomore year of high school through my sophomore year of college that I only wore skirts and dresses.
Because of this doctrine you had found from ages ago.
Yes.
Wow. And you just wanted to do it right. You just wanted to do it as possibly right as you possibly could do it.
Mm-hmm. Because there was this whole like concept of we're the ones who are doing Catholicism the right way. And the right way is to follow it 100%. Like there is no picking and choosing. And so I was like, okay, if we're saying there's no picking and choosing, it's everything then.
Wow. So well, that's a good way of describing too the fundamentalist leaning, right? Because I think a lot of people view, at least Mormons, I think view Catholicism generally as kind of pick where you're at on the spectrum.
Right.
And whatever, you know, you vibe with, great. Whatever you don't vibe with, great.
Right.
Which now I see as an incredibly healthy approach to any set of rules.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that fundamentalist leaning is just like, no, you can't pick and choose.
Right.
Which, yeah, is very on par with Mormonism, which is that it's not a religion where you get to pick and choose what you opt into and what you don't.
Exactly.
Wow. Can you give any examples of the types of things you were being taught by your leaders at that time?
So one of the things that looking back on, I'm like, that is so toxic and harmful, is there was like definitely a very intentional breaking down of identity that was happening in these like youth group type settings where we would do these activities where we would write down on a name tag like these identities we have for ourselves. But these aren't even like, I can kind of see how this could be a good activity. I mean, working in like the mental health field now.
Totally.
I'm like, if this could be a great activity if it's like meth addict, but like not if you're like 14 and you're writing down like musician, athlete, and we're like laying these name tags at the foot of the cross. There's like a cross down by the stage and we're like walking down the aisles all dramatic, laying these name tags at the foot of the cross, like an actual physical cross that's up there being like, we are not musicians or athletes. We are sons and daughters of Christ.
Wow.
We did this one too where we like wrote things on tiles and like smashed these tiles on like the floor.
Such a literal, I mean, I guess that it's an object lesson, so it's figurative, but it's actually saying you shouldn't be well-rounded.
Right.
These other identities that you might have, ultimately, those don't really matter.
Yes.
And if anything, not only they don't really matter, they're actually obstacles toward the ultimate thing, which is to be perfect disciples of Christ.
Yes.
That's very scary for a developing brain.
Right.
Really scary.
It's insane. And I think it really was around this time that like people in my life were kind of concerned because my family just was not in it this much. They were like,
Why is Evelyn only wearing skirts?
Why is she only wearing skirts? I literally like we went swimming once at like a family reunion and I had like a swim skirt on.
Oh,
and my cousin
gosh.
Was like, she was like little, she was like six, and she was like, are you Amish now or something? And I like cried. But like I truly believe I was doing what I had to do. Like
yeah.
Nothing matters more. If you believe that what is on the line is eternal salvation, like nothing matters more. You can suffer as much as it doesn't matter how much you suffer here because it's temporary.
Yeah. For the ultimate reward, the ultimate goal. Right. Yeah. I'm curious, you were talking about your mental health struggles.
Yeah.
I'm curious how you view that maybe now in retrospect, because it seems like in one way, it was giving you stability, socialization, right. purpose, meaning, mm-hmm. but in kind of a toxic way.
Right. I think it's hard. I think about it now and I think about, okay, because I work in, we were talking before, but like yes. I work in like substance abuse treatment. And a lot of people from the outside think things like AA are like high control groups or like kind of toxic. I definitely can see how there's elements of those types of groups like that could fall under categories of high control groups. And at the same time, if that is the thing giving someone purpose and meaning to like heal from addiction and like stay alive, go to AA. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we'd rather you be alive and
exactly.
okay.
Yeah. So I feel like that's kind of like my relationship with the way that I grew up now. I think it happened for a reason. Or at least like it worked out in the end. It got me where I needed to go.
It kept you afloat until you could maybe be in a place to
exactly.
unpack some of it.
Because when I was a child, I had no other escape from the things that I was going through in my home life. That was my outlet. I can't like move or remove myself from that situation. Mm-hmm. So
it just, yeah, it can be both things, right?
Exactly.
It's so interesting you saying that. I'm thinking about, I saw this Instagram post that someone shared fairly recently, and it was from someone who had just been diagnosed with a really aggressive form of cancer. And I clicked on the post, and the caption of this person who had been diagnosed with cancer was very, very Jesus-y. You know, the Lord will get me through this. Mm-hmm. I know that there's... It was about divine timing and surrendering to God's will and Jesus and the atonement and the enabling power of the atonement. And it was so interesting to read. I've been thinking a lot about it because it's even complicated to talk about, because I really truly think you just got diagnosed with a likely fatal form of cancer.
Right.
I am not judging however you need to get through what you have to get through. Exactly. I'm really not. Do I feel like reading that caption, there are some things that kind of ring in my ears as toxic or potentially, yeah. you know, dangerous is maybe too extreme a word. But for me, with my life experiences, reading that, it's very different than I would approach something like that. And part of it made me feel like, are you really sitting with what this means, or are you putting it on God's timing, et cetera?
Right.
All the things we could say to kind of break down that caption. However, to your point, I was also thinking, do what you got to do. And
right.
if anything, when you just got diagnosed with a likely fatal cancer, I'm glad you have something
exactly.
that can keep you going, because I don't know. I would like to think that even though I don't identify as religious anymore, I would also be able to find those things. But I don't know, because that hasn't been my experience.
Right.
All that to say, obviously, no conclusions. I just think it's a really interesting thing to think about with religion.
It is.
That in times where people need to stay afloat, it can help people stay afloat. And, you know, I think that can be a really good thing in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Even if the messaging of the things keeping them afloat, I still find a little bit high control or.
Yeah. I think that's actually been something that I had to confront, because I've worked in substance abuse treatment for a little over a year now. And I've also been out of the church for like a year and a half. So when I started working there, I definitely had a much more negative view towards anything that rings like high control religion type
absolutely
vibes. But in the conversations that I had with some of the clients at the crisis unit I was working at, a lot of them have these religious beliefs that are like what are powering them through. And they have these like religious communities that are providing them that support as they're like healing from addiction. And I also think something that's interesting from then having gone to like a high control religion school is that a lot of people who voluntarily put themselves in these high control spaces are people who have endured a lot of trauma. Like, that's just my observation. I think that needs to be studied.
Yeah, totally.
I was like so curious about it. But I think that in a lot of ways, high control religion is a coping mechanism. Not if you're like born into it. There's like a difference if like you were raised in it. But the people who come into it themselves, a lot of times it's a coping mechanism. Something I have really been realizing in like interactions with people who are still in those spaces is that it's kind of like what they say with like eating disorders. When your life is so out of control and you're just trying to find something to like control, I feel like religion a lot of times can be that for people. Like,
absolutely.
They need that like rigid black and white because everything else feels so unsafe.
Yeah.
And so when you're challenging those beliefs for them, you're not just like challenging those beliefs. You're like challenging this sense of safety they've built for themselves.
Yeah. Yes. That is so interesting. I hadn't made the distinction between our stories with me as a Mormon. And I'm also curious how this will ring to anyone listening who's maybe a convert to Mormonism. Yeah. Because I hadn't fully kind of crystallized that difference of so much of my story, I feel like was I'm doing this because this is what I have to do because I believed that the ultimate reward, to your point, was heaven, but also because I believed that this is what I have to do because everyone around me is doing it, because my parents are doing it. But it never really was a choice for me,
right?
Because it was the water I was swimming in.
Yeah.
So for you, that probably brings up a lot of different things because you chose it,
right,
yourself.
Exactly.
And I mean, chose is maybe a complicated word to use when there's elements of, right, you know, the things that those groups can do to your brain, especially, right, when you're young. But that is a very interesting thing that I hadn't thought about, of feeling drawn to or attracted to something.
Yeah.
Because of the control and the stability that, mm-hmm, you felt like it could give you.
And that was something members of my family always used to say to me. They're like, a certain kind of person needs that level of control in what they were observing in my life. And like 100%, I agree with that now. But the certain kind of person was me as a really traumatized person who, like, most people in my life didn't know what I was going through.
Yeah.
And I needed that stability.
Yeah.
So.
And in an ideal world, you would have been given less toxic communities,
right,
and treatments that were informed, yes, by science as opposed, right, exactly.
Yes.
But in the circumstances you were in, it was better that than, yeah, not that. Okay, let's get to the chapter of going to Franciscan.
Yes.
I'm so fascinated by this whole thing.
It's crazy.
Yes. What led you? So explain what Franciscan is and what led you to end up going there for college.
Yes. So it is what is called a Newman List school. I don't know how many are on the Newman List, but basically they're like all high control Catholicism schools. And I very much went into choosing a college with the understanding that I needed to go to a Newman List school. I had always loved youth ministry, and my youth minister was like, you could be a youth minister and then you would also do missions. And I was like, that's great. So he had gone to Franciscan to get his youth ministry degree, and I was kind of asking him about it, and I was like, that's what I'm going to do. So I went to Franciscan. It was quite literally the only school I applied to. My family was so upset. I had been like an AP student. I got really good SAT scores. My parents put me in like SAT classes and stuff. I could have gotten into a lot of different schools, and I applied to a religious school with a 97% acceptance rate. Like, they were pissed.
Yeah.
We didn't get to pick our classes that we took our freshman year. They were just like assigned to us. And I took Foundations of Catholicism, which was like a gen ed class. And I was sitting there, and some of the things the professor was saying, I was like, what are you saying? It was even more fundamentalist than the parish I had like grown,
really,
up in. And like, it was the first time I found myself disagreeing with stuff. Like,
because of how fundamental it was.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because Well, so my freshman year was the year that Pope Francis made that statement where basically he was like, maybe gay people aren't going to hell. He was just like, we like maybe shouldn't murder gay people and like maybe they shouldn't go to jail.
Radical.
Crazy concept. And like
progressive. I know, progressive Pope.
I know. And everyone was so up in arms about it. And we were like talking about it in my Foundations of Catholicism class. And he was saying like, no, like the civil law is supposed to reflect the moral law. And that's where I was getting like really, like I was feeling like very Christian nationalism. And I'd never been, like I'd always like been fundamentalist, but also like fully understood the separation of church and state.
Yes. You weren't trying to push fundamentalism necessarily through law on right. everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great. And so,
I don't know. I was like, I feel like this is where we draw a line.
Yeah.
And so I like raised my hand and I was saying, if you think that's the case, like in the eyes of the Catholic Church, all sexual sin is the same. So if you think it should be like gay people should go to jail, do you think that couples who have sex before marriage should go to jail? And he was like, yeah, like I think the Catholic Church would support that. And that was where I was just like, what are we saying? Like, what
in
are we
in a college
saying?
Setting, too. Right. I don't know why that feels so different to me. I mean, I went to fucking BYU, but it feels so different to me when it's a professor saying right. something like that as opposed to your youth minister say. I mean,
exactly.
Awful both ways.
Yeah, but it's different when it's a college professor teaching people who will impact the way then, like, you know, youth are formed.
Absolutely.
Because it's a youth ministry program.
Yeah.
And we're saying things like this.
Whoa. Also good for you. Very smart, logical argument, but crazy that he was like, yeah, actually.
I was just like, okay.
Just jails overflowing.
I was like, I don't think I'm cut out for this. So then I did this thing that they had where you basically had like a small team and you would like throw a retreat for a Catholic school or like a youth group or something. I did that for 2 semesters and I like hated it. I hate coming up with these activities that feel like kind of a little spiritually manipulative. Like I'm not living for this. And I kind of started to see like the behind the scenes of we're coming up with things to like literally emotionally manipulate teens.
Ooh,
and like that feels kind of icky.
Speak to that a little bit more.
Yeah. It would be like we need to do activities that will like get people to open up. I kind of started to like realize things, connections to what I'd grown up with in youth group where like they would intentionally put us in small groups on retreats and then ask these like super emotionally loaded questions to like try to get us to open up, literally getting like teenagers to trauma dump on people they don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah. Intentionally getting not just, okay, they're in a safe space. They feel like they can open up, but really, truly manipulating them into yeah. doing that.
Yes.
Yeah. Whoa.
So I was just like, I don't like this. So I switched my major. I was education for like a second. And then I was like, no. And then I switched to human development and family studies. So that was what I was in for like the rest of my time at Franciscan. Mm. I also started deconstructing. But I started getting into the classes where like there literally was a whole class I took that was about why gay marriage should not be legal in America. And that was the subject of the whole entire class. That was actually also after I was already dating Katie.
Oh, wow.
So that one
yeah,
like really
hit a little
like.
Different at that point.
I literally took one that was called American Law 2. And he was just like talking about – this was bizarre to me because, okay, this is something people love to call me out on all the time on my social media. I used to work in like the pro-life movement. I was very vocal about it on social media, so it's like not a secret. I really never, like I was saying before, I had like the separation of church and state mindset. I never was like trying to push it because I thought like religious beliefs should dictate the government. I just like truly believed that we were protecting human life and like that's important. But then we were going through like my American law class and we were talking about how like all of the Supreme Court decisions, making it so that gay people can't be arrested for being gay and making it so that birth control is accessible to married and unmarried couples and making it so that interracial marriage, they're all built on the same precedent, which is what was overturned in like the Dobbs versus Jackson decision, which just puts everything on shaky ground. And like my law professor was so excited about it, like so excited about the concept of birth control not being accessible to anyone and like
reversing essentially all of this progress.
Everything.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are we saying?
Wild.
Being taught in college classes at an accredited university.
Wild, wild, wild.
So,
okay, what kicked off your deconstruction? Because it sounds like being at Franciscan, you kind of pretty quickly alarm bells started going off of, wait a second.
Yes. And it wasn't with the Catholicism. Like, none of that yet was making me question if the Catholic Church is true. None of that was shaking my faith in any kind of way. It was just making me be like, are you guys okay? This is too far.
You're taking it too far.
Right.
Yeah.
The first thing I think I deconstructed was the skirts thing. That, like, wasn't crazy because most people at Franciscan did not think that, like, was, like, a thing. For the most part, like, women wear pants on the campus.
It wasn't like
fine.
People were looking at you funny.
Yeah.
Probably felt really nice to slip a pair of jeans on.
It felt so weird.
Oh, I
bet. Felt so weird.
Yes.
I was so self-conscious about everything.
Oh, but I bet. When I got home from my mission, it was kind of that way. I would wear jeans very occasionally on, like, P-Day, but you only wear skirts. And it's weird when you get home after a year and a half, but you had been doing that for what?
4 years?
Yeah,
3 or 4 years.
That's a long time.
It's a minute.
Yeah.
And, like, to work out, like, I had athletic skirts, I had swim skirts.
My
I had only been wearing skirts. So it was a crazy moment for me. But yeah, I deconstructed that and I don't feel like that didn't even, like, really shake my faith or anything. It just, like, felt, like, doctrinally correct from, like, more things I'd been learning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so I came to terms with being queer while I was at Franciscan. Mm. I wasn't in, like, active denial growing up because, like, it didn't even cross my brain that I could be queer. I did want to kiss my best friend, but I, like, thought that was chill and normal.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was gay.
Yeah. I love hearing that. I feel like a lot of people, when I ask, like, yeah, when did it, like, you know, when did you realize, which I know that's, like, kind of a crazy question anyway,
right.
But a lot of people will be like, well, it's hard when you don't have a counterpoint. It's like, you're just living your experience.
Right.
So it's hard to say. I can imagine.
Like, I wanted to marry my best friend when I was 6. And then they told me that was illegal and gay. And, like, I was like, oh, okay. Like,
from then on
out,
that's
not what we do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Fine. Sure. Chill.
Yeah.
I really didn't have exposure to gay people either. I'm like, living in Texas, it's kind of a closeted deal.
Yeah.
For everyone.
Yeah.
So I got to Franciscan my freshman year. A couple of the girls that I became friends with were queer, but they were, like, abiding by church teaching. And I feel like that opened my mind to, like, listening to those experiences more because, like, it's valid if they're following church teaching.
It was less threatening.
Like, it was, yeah, it was fine.
Also really interesting. Yeah.
These were just, like, some of my friends that I was, like, hanging out and chatting with. And I was like, wait, like, that's not a gay thing. Like, that's a normal thing. And they're like, no, like, that's a gay thing. And I was just, like, clicking pieces together. And I was like, I guess I'm bi then. I find women attractive. Like, I would want to kiss a girl. Apparently that's gay. So, like, sure, I'm bi. But I dated guys. So I was like, yeah.
I date,
like,
guys
whatever.
Too. Sure.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It wasn't, like, a faith shaking thing for me because I was like, sure, whatever, it exists. I'm not going to date a girl. I'm still going to marry a man and I'm going to abide by church teaching and it's chill. It's whatever. I started dating a guy and that's when I started being like, I don't know that I'm actually attracted to men at all.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that I want to get married to a man. But, like, I did because it was so hard for me to come to terms with me not being attracted to men.
I'm curious what the general sentiment, I mean, that might be a difficult thing to answer, but obviously in your sphere, in Franciscan at the time, it seems like growing up, it was not okay to be gay.
Right.
But in Catholicism generally, were you ever thinking, like, well, there's this kind of different way of being a Catholic where it's more accepted, or is it more accepted generally?
It's not, like, really technically accepted by Catholic doctrine. You can't, like, get gay married in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
But there was this, like, recent thing with Pope Francis where he was saying same-sex couples can be blessed, but it can't resemble
marriage.
Yeah, that
was really recent, right?
Yeah, very recent. And, oh my God, people are so pissed about it, like, in, like, the circles I'm from.
Oh, I'm sure.
So I do feel like things are kind of changing towards, like, there. I do know people who are gay and are married or in relationships where they still, like, attend Catholic churches and they go to parishes that are accepting. And I know there are parishes that do pride stuff or, like, have, like, gay young adult groups. But I was talking to one of my friends about this, actually. It's so hard for me to rationalize that. I still consider myself a Christian. I'm, like, wanting to find a church now that I'm here in LA and there's options.
Yeah.
But to be Catholic in a church that, like, doesn't doctrinally accept that. It just feels like a space I don't need to be forcing myself into.
Totally. There's other options to worship Christ and to find community.
Yeah.
That it's just not even like a, well, you know, kind of maybe.
Like
it's,
you could, but like, yeah. I don't want to. Like, I want to be somewhere that I'm accepted and celebrated.
Yes.
And that's like what a religious community should be.
Totally.
So.
Totally.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're discovering you're queer. Yes.
Sorry.
Because you're dating this guy.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of like, not it.
I literally was questioning it. I was like making a pro con list of like breaking up with him. Mm. And I basically like the cons were like, the pros were like everything. And the cons were like, what if I break up with him, but God wanted me to marry him? And this is like me ruining the will of God.
Mm.
So it reached a point where I was like so terrified that I was going to get married and like have kids and still be reckoning with this down the line. And now like I'm affecting other people in a way that's really unfair to them.
Mm.
So I broke up with him during my sophomore year. And then the summer after my sophomore year, I lived with some of my household sisters. One of my friends who I was living with, she was getting her master's in theology. And so like I love talking about the theological things with her. And she started reading stuff this guy named Chris Damian was posting. She was asking me to read some of the stuff and I was reading it and I was like, this is a little out there. This is very progressive Catholicism. Do you think this is theologically sound? And she had so much more of a religious background than me too, because her parents are like very intensely like in the church, kind of big people in the church.
Mm.
She was like, I think the way he's explaining it makes sense. And it was the first time like I kind of ever considered this gray space. And I was like, I don't know. But I was liking the things he was saying. Like he was talking about, this gets like deep into Catholic theology that like is hard to explain. But there was like this pope called Pope John Paul II, and he did this thing called theology of the body. It was very revolutionary because sex had been this very dirty thing in the Catholic Church, and Pope John Paul II kind of revolutionized it. It was like, no, like sex is like a really good thing in marriage, and we should like be proud of our sexualities, and like it's a part of who we are as people. This author was arguing that it was a step in the direction of like accepting other sexualities and things like that.
Yeah.
Obviously in like a lot more theological detail. But anyway, I was like, this is kind of wow. So her and I spent all summer like reading all the stuff he was posting. He put out this podcast episode where he was interviewing this guy who had gone through conversion therapy in the Catholic Church. And all of this stuff was just like breaking my brain and breaking my concept of everything, because it's so hard to change even one perspective about something in the church, because if one thing about the one true church as ordained by God is wrong, then like what else is wrong?
It has to all be true.
It has to all be true. Yes. So you can't question any of the pieces or all is a problem. That was so hard for me. And I had this philosophy professor once who was saying that we have to go into exploring church doctrine as an explorer rather than a warrior. Basically, he was saying, if we have questions about doctrine, we have to figure out why the doctrine's correct. We shouldn't be seeking to tear the doctrine down.
Mm-hmm. So you can have questions, but only in as much as your questions are leading you to confirm the truth
exactly,
of it.
Yeah. Exactly. It's not actually allowing people to question anything.
Yeah, it's a really good cover for being like, oh, you're allowed to have questions. Just make sure that when you have the questions, you're reading the right information.
Yes.
And that the answers you find check out against the powers that be.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so one of the things I think also in fundamentalist Catholicism that's like crazy is the amount of emphasis that's placed on confession. Because like I was saying before, really you only have to go to confession in like the doctrine of the church if you're in like a state of mortal sin. But in these spaces, a lot of people were like, you should be going weekly. And I hated confession, always hated confession. There was this one church in our area that had it where it was behind the screen. Mm-hmm. So you like don't have to actually look them in the eyes.
I thought it was all behind the screen.
It's not. A lot of confession these days is like face to face.
And a lot
of times they'll do it face to face with like multiple priests in the church at the same time. You're in like different corners of the church, but you're like not in your own space. Oh my God, I hated confession.
Scary.
I hated it. And the church that had it behind the screen was like the super traditionalist church, and it scared me. But I would like go wait in line there
so that I could have the screen.
Could have the screen.
And that summer, I tried to not go to confession as much and then was just like eaten alive by the guilt. I was trying to live in a more middle ground place, but like the religious OCD of it all was not loving that. Backtracking a little bit, I started having panic attacks my freshman year of college, and they got really bad my sophomore year. I think there just was a lot of dissonance and anxiety around religious things. And so I'd be like trying to sit through mass and be having like panic attacks and like, but like not being able to leave, because if I'm not fulfilling my Sunday obligation of being at mass, then like I'm in a state of sin. But I was spiraling.
But you felt really trapped.
I felt so trapped. And I was like waking up in the middle of the night having panic attacks. And then I was so scared because, so there's like a big emphasis at that school on like the gifts of the spirit. And so there's people who are saying they have the gift of like being able to see the angels and demons. And so people are talking about like demons roaming around campus. I don't know if you've heard about like the Ted Bundy story. He like went and was breaking into this sorority house, killing a bunch of girls. And one of the girls had a rosary and was like praying her rosary, and he like didn't kill her. And so then my like brain is going like, I have to fall asleep praying my rosary every single night so I don't get like murdered in my sleep.
Or a demon's going to overtake me.
Did you correlate those panic attacks to demons?
I thought so, because I started receiving mental health treatment at the end of my sophomore year of high school or of college. So I didn't even like have a concept that what I was experiencing was a panic attack.
Yeah, I was going to say not even care, just like basic probably knowledge about mental health.
So each of the dorms had like a chaplain that would have like office hours that you could like go visit them. And so I like went to our dorm chaplain and I was like explaining it. And he was basically saying, I'm not saying it's demonic, but like it could be demonic.
And okay, thanks.
I was like, great, thank you. So he gave me what was called Prayers of Minor Exorcism. There's like a book that all priests have of the Prayers of Minor Exorcism, but they're meant to be prayed over people. Priests are supposed to pray them over people. Like the public's not supposed to have access to them. But he literally had me like take pictures of some of the prayers in the book. And he was like, don't tell anyone, like don't show anyone, because these are not public access. I want you to pray these when you're having like these panic attacks. He didn't use the word panic attacks, obviously. But now I'm like spiraling. Every time I'm having a panic attack, I'm like obsessively praying these prayers.
Which is not going to help a panic attack.
No.
I can't think of anything that would be possibly worse for a panic attack than an exorcism prayer.
Right.
That you're in charge of praying.
Right. So I was like, this is so fun. This is so great. All of that stuff was happening the summer after my sophomore year. And I was really starting to question stuff. And I was like really uncomfortable with the idea of questioning stuff. And I ended up, 4 weeks before the semester started, I applied to go to the Austria campus for the semester. I got a passport in 4 weeks. It showed up 2 days before I left for the semester. It was just like the most insane thing I've ever done. But I was like, I'm running away from this. I'm not going to talk to this person who's putting all these doubts in my head. I was like, I'm running away. I signed up for a full course load of theology classes. I'm going to be living in a monastery in Austria.
Yeah. Like, how much more pure and holy can you get?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to mass every single day. I'm going to go to confession every single week. And no one is tearing my faith out of my hands. So I got there. One of the theology classes I was taking there was Christian marriage. I met a girl in my Christian marriage class.
You can't make it up.
You cannot. And I had a little like queer Austria situationship.
Fun.
We held hands in Rome and cried and went to confession. We never even kissed. We just like held hands and felt existential guilt.
But you felt romantic toward each other, and you both
knew. Like, it didn't link. It wasn't like a thing. I mean, it was. Anyway.
Yes.
It was its own thing. And that was like tearing me up inside. I felt like I needed to go to confession. But for your confession to like actually absolve you of your sins, you have to be sorry. And like I didn't – I knew that what I was doing was supposed to be wrong, but I didn't feel sorry. And so I was like, I can't go to confession because like it doesn't count if you're not truly sorry for your sins and you're not going to like truly promise to never do it again. I was like, I don't feel like what I'm doing is wrong, so I can't go to confession. If I can't go to confession, like I can't receive the sacrament at mass – I'm not going to go sit in mass with like this group of a couple hundred people from my religious university who are going to see that I'm not receiving the sacrament and be like, judgy about
what's
it.
What's going on?
Mm-hmm. So I started skipping mass sometimes. I remember the first time after that girl and I like held hands, walking around that campus feeling like everyone could see into my soul. There also was like the fact that some people claim to have like the spiritual gift of like discernment of spirits. So like there was so a small part of my brain that genuinely thought like someone was like staring into my soul.
Yeah.
They would say that about like the nuns on the campus too. They would say like, oh, like Sister Isabel like has discernment of spirits. Like she can see straight through your soul. So I was like, ah.
You're like, avoid Sister Isabel like, at all costs.
I was terrified.
Yeah, scary.
And like, yeah, taking all these theology classes. And then one of the theology classes I was taking was making me question things too, because we were talking about like the way doctrine develops over time. And I think that a large narrative that was portrayed to me in fundamentalist Catholicism is that like the doctrine of the church never changes. And that's true about a lot of things, but like the sacraments of the Catholic Church, like marriage, baptism, confession, all of those things, they were solidified into the form they currently have in the 1500s. So closer to now than like to Jesus. And it's like crazy that this was portrayed to me as like some never changing thing from the mouth of Jesus himself.
Yes. Also so fascinating, because so much of this messaging, we were being told the same things as Mormons. So it's like, which is it? You know, how do you really know which one it is? One true church that was instilled in Mormons. The doctrine never changes, and it's the only true doctrine. And it's so crazy too, because it wasn't really part of my deconstruction in a huge way to realize, wait, but other people are being told that same thing. But it was something that came up for me. But it's interesting hearing you deconstruct and thinking, oh, I was deconstructing the same things, but our things were completely opposing each other, you know?
I know.
Yeah.
It's insane. Yeah. I just like, I was taking all these theology classes. I was like picking things apart. When I was in Greece was the last time I ever went to mass. And then we went to Albania. I got like deathly ill in Albania. So I was like staying back in the Airbnb, and I was like just watching Netflix, and a documentary came out called Pray Away. And it was about this group of people who had run one of the largest conversion therapy networks in America, who like 40 years down the line shut the organization down because they saw all the harm it was doing to people's mental health. And also they were all still gay. They had been claiming they were ex-gay. They were in heterosexual marriages, and they were like leaving them and like still being gay. Mm-hmm. At this point in my life, my conviction was that I was going to like be like a single foster mom or something. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is my best shot at like best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't have a partner. I can't be a nun. Like, it's just not, I don't feel called to that whatsoever. I want to have kids. So like, I guess I'll do this. But I was like staring at this, and I was like, am I going to live this way for 40 more years and then hate my life and like regret all my choices when I've wasted so much of my life? And it was the complete opposite of like the narrative I've been living my entire life on, which is like, it literally doesn't matter how much life on earth sucks, is because eternity will be good. Mm-hmm. I also was starting to question the notion of like doctrines on heaven and hell, because I was learning in some of my theology classes that a lot of the early church fathers of the Catholic Church didn't believed in universal salvation. Basically, everyone in the end would make their way to heaven.
Yeah.
I like that idea so much better. Like, yeah. That feels like the good news. I was hearing it explained in like theological ways that Jesus came to like atone for us. The good news is that everyone will receive salvation.
Yeah.
And like that feels like good news. Like, yeah. What doesn't feel like good news is like a very small select group of people will not suffer for eternity.
Yes. And in order to not suffer for eternity, you're going to have to probably suffer pretty significantly here on Earth, depending if you're gay or not, or like XYZ. Yeah.
So it was a hard situation, because in coming out on the other side of it, a lot of people did think that the gay thing was like what had led me to deconstruct. Mm-hmm. And like in a way, it kind of was, because I did like reach that point where I was like, this isn't fair. I need to figure out if I'm bi or actually gay, because I think as long as I'm in the church, I'm going to keep just wanting to be bi so that I can have a marriage someday. That was blinding me to even being able to like rationally judge if there was like any part of me that was still attracted to men.
Yeah. How can you actually explore your sexuality if you can't actually explore your sexuality?
Exactly. So there was a part of me where I was like, I need to take a step back. Like, I need to figure this out. I can come back to the church when I have this figured out. I can't drag other people into this. And that was something we were talking about in my Christian marriage class, we were talking about the personalist principle, how a person can never be used as a means to an end. Mm. And that was how it felt like my relationships with guys were a lot of the time. It was a means to the end of like marriage and children.
Yeah. You didn't want to marry a man that you couldn't maybe, that you knew you couldn't give love, romance.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The gay thing is what forced me to confront a lot of these things, but was hardly the reason I left the church.
Oh, 100%.
Like, it just opened that door of like genuinely questioning things.
Yeah.
I started like not going to mass. I started like not going to confession. And I started feeling okay with it. And it was a scary thing because I was always told when you open the door to sin and you like start sinning, it just like gets easier to sin as time goes on.
The slippery slope. Did they call it that? What did they call it?
I don't think the word slippery slope were used, but I was definitely just told like, it's hard to live a godly life because Satan's going to be pulling on you constantly. But the guilt will start to like fade as you're sinning over time because Satan knows he doesn't have to like try as hard for you anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Like he knows he's already got you.
Yeah.
And so there was like that massive amount of fear there of like, what if this is getting – like what if I'm like finally feeling inner peace with myself because like Satan's not fighting for my soul anymore? But like also
It's, what a scary thing. That's a little twist on it I hadn't heard before, but it's like once you start feeling okay, that's because Satan's given up on you because you're right. Already too far gone, essentially. Exactly. Scary.
I know. So scary. But it was also contrary to everything I'd ever heard about discernment, because what people say about discernment is that the fruits of the spirit are like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, yeah. and self-control. Yeah. And those are the things that you'll like feel if you're living in the will of the spirit. I was starting to feel like this peace and this joy, which like feels very contrary to like what it should be if I'm living in sin.
Totally. Yeah.
So it feels like they're two completely contradictory messages and they just pick whichever one they need to like mm-hmm. manipulate your choices.
Yep.
Yeah, I just started being a lot more at peace with it. I was struggling a lot because I lost a lot of friends throughout that semester.
Because of your deconstruction?
Yeah. Like I lost some people who were like pushing me away because of it and some people like that I was pushing away because I was scared of them knowing too much and like reporting things to administration.
At Franciscan, is it similar to like BYU where it has an honor code where it's like you cannot be having gay relations as they would put it or they'll kick you out, or what's the setup there?
So I guess fast forward down to me leaving Franciscan.
Yeah.
There's like a student code of conduct that like very minimally touched on that, but actually 2 days after my meeting with someone in administration,
they called you in.
So yeah, I received a DM on Instagram at 2 a.m. from someone in administration, which feels very professional.
Because you were sharing about your deconstruction on TikTok and Instagram.
Yeah.
And this is all fairly recently.
This was this past October.
Yeah.
September, October.
Because when I found you on TikTok, that's how we met each other.
Yeah.
You were still at Franciscan.
Yes.
So none of this had happened, but you were sharing about deconstruction on TikTok. Yeah.
I had reached a point where, well, I had like read the student handbook cover to cover and I was like, okay, I can't talk about like being gay, but I can talk about having different theological opinions. Like nothing they can do about me per the student handbook.
Just because they can't kick you out just because you're, thinking differently theologically. Exactly. Yeah.
I was losing a lot of community and so kind of starting to like post some stuff online. I also was like writing stuff. I'm writing a book right now.
Yeah, can't wait.
But I was just like writing, posting on social media. Like that was my outlet for like processing this stuff because I didn't have a lot of people I felt like I could talk to about it.
So you get the DM.
So I get the DM. 2 a.m. It was basically just them being like, oh, like I haven't seen you on campus a lot this semester. He was like, well, I'd love to like meet up with you. Like, do you have a time? So next day I'm in his office. He was basically like starting off. He was like talking about a lot of stuff from my Instagram. He was like, oh, I saw you went here and I saw you went here. And like, it was like very friendly, very conversational, but like also making it clear, like, I see what you post on social media. What was so difficult about this conversation is that it happened in a way where I knew I would never be able to come out and straight up say, oh, I was threatened, because it was very in the subtext of the conversation. Yes. But it was like, oh, I see what you're posting on social media. And then also he was saying, you really have a heart for like the LGBT community. Like, I see you post some things that are kind of like LGBT, like adjacent. Basically just this subtext of like, I see that you post about gay stuff. I see that you post about deconstruction stuff.
I'm watching you.
I'm watching you. Then he asked me, he was like, what do you think we can do to like better the community or like resources available for LGBT people on campus? And I was like, great question. I think it would be good if we like didn't kick out gay people. That was what I said, basically. And he was like, we kick out straight couples that have sex before marriage too. Like that crosses my desk way more often. And I was like, maybe we just don't do any of that. He was like, I mean, people can seek out like pastoral resources. People can seek out like mental health resources. He was like, it's a lot harder because if a heterosexual case crosses my desk, like a lot of the times they're still in the church and they know that what they're doing is wrong and they're willing to like repent and like receive pastoral resources. But if I come across a gay couple, they're usually at a place where they've reconciled that what they're doing isn't wrong and they're not willing to change. And so that's why a lot more of the time it leads to people being removed from the university.
It's also revealing so much because it's like, you can't compare the two. You just said why you can't compare the two.
Exactly.
You revealed the difference between those two things. Being gay is an identity.
Right.
It's not having sex before marriage. They're so different.
Yes.
They want to compare them, obviously. They want to say, well, the rules are the same for everybody. Yes. Nobody can have sex unless they're married. But it's like, being gay is so much more than
exactly.
That.
Because it's like, if a gay couple was like holding hands walking through campus, that would be treated the same
exactly.
as like a straight couple having sex.
Exactly. And a gay couple can never get married. So
exactly.
They can literally never have sex with each other.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
ugh, what a conversation.
Yeah. And so I was dating Katie at this point. We started dating last February. So it's like a little over a year now.
Yeah.
So I was like with Katie, kind of posting things that hinted at that, but in ways where I was like so careful to never let it be something that someone could like put their finger on and be like, this is evidence.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I was like walking that line so hard because I just like needed to have autonomy, but like also just wanted to graduate. So I basically left that conversation confused. I was like, I feel like there was subtext here, but I also was like, I don't want to assume the worst.
It's kind of almost worse.
I know.
Than if he just said like, hey, you can't be posting this shit online.
I know.
And it seems like you might be in a gay relationship. And if you are, you'll get kicked out. It's like ickier that he was so that way about it.
And so I had actually heard from this person a couple years before that. When I started going to that school, I was vegan. And I was like just posting a TikTok complaining about how like they had told me I would have access to vegan food and there was no access to vegan food. And I also wasn't allowed to have my car on campus as a freshman. And I had gotten an email being like, I'm disappointed in the way you're representing the university on social media.
Woof.
So like it was very apparent that my social media was being reviewed from when I got there, when I was still posting like Catholic influencer type stuff.
Who's got the goddamn time?
No.
To be monitoring people's social media that closely is very scary in and of itself.
I texted you after this being like, I'm deleting my social media. Like,
yes.
I was just like, because
you just were like, I just have to get through. I have to get my degree. Through. Yeah.
And then I was just spiraling, panicking because I knew this girl who had been at the same school, who had gotten pregnant and was not complying with what they were asking her to do and had ended up getting kicked out for cheating on a 5-point homework assignment for Spanish. And I was just absolutely living with this spiraling anxiety that the same thing was going to happen to me. And I'm like never going to get into another school. I have an immaculate academic record. I mean, not so much in college because I was like dealing with a lot of mental health stuff. But like I'd never had like academic.
Yeah, you don't want to get it wrongly accused of cheating
because
they want to kick you out because they suspect you're gay. Yeah,
exactly. I was just absolutely terrified that that was the direction things were heading. And so I was like, my options are to like lay so low, make no comments in class, write my little essays about why gay people shouldn't be allowed to get married in America, get my degree and leave. But that feels so dishonest. I was just like at my wit's end. And I had been wanting to leave for a while, but like just couldn't justify. It's an expensive school. I had good scholarships, but it's an expensive private school. And I was 3 years into it. I just couldn't justify leaving and starting over. But I didn't want that school on my degree. And I really like wrestled with it for a while. And I was like, I don't think I can live for October till May with this weight hanging over my head of like the other shoe dropping at any other at any possible second. And so I ended up withdrawing like the next day. I literally, all of this mental battle is happening in the span of like 24 hours. I withdrew the next day, and the day after that, they released a compendium on human sexuality, which apparently had been in the works for like a year at that point, which I think is just like very interesting timing that my meeting was the day before this dropped.
Yeah.
Because it was 12 pages of like, if gay couples hold hands, they will get kicked out. Ooh. If you have your pronouns in your social media bio, we're going to have issues. If you're posting things on social media that are disparaging the university, we're going to have issues. Lots of things that felt very pointed. And obviously, like, I'm not saying like, oh, it's all about me. But like, there were definitely things in there that would have been used to discipline me.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very happy I trusted my gut and left before like possibly facing academic sanctions.
Yeah, literally so close, because so they could have just released that, got you, and who knows.
It was like a warning, like right before that dropped.
Yeah.
Of like, shut up, or like, we have reasons now. Like, we have
codified rules that we can get you on.
Yes.
Whoa. I'm so proud of you for withdrawing.
Thank you.
That's really scary.
It was.
Wow. I just think, we were just talking about this before we started interviewing. You're 21.
Yes.
And I feel like, I'm 28. It's not that different. But to have the wherewithal at that age and like make such brave decisions is super, super impressive.
Thank you.
And I also just admire so much. I've been thinking as we've talked this whole time, you talk about this a lot on social media, and Evelyn's on TikTok. What's your TikTok handle?
It's The Life of Ev.
The Life of Ev.
Yes.
You make such good content. And just to even have the bravery to start out on social media as like a pro Catholic influencer and then deconstruct in real time.
Yeah.
And now share about the toxicity you've recognized and the ways you've been wronged and harmed. I just think that's such a huge, huge thing to be able to do.
Thank you.
And I'm just so impressed by it. I'm also impressed by the real timeness of it, because for me, it took a lot of time deconstructing privately and then coming to terms with that privately before I felt brave enough, quite frankly, to share openly. So I'm just so inspired by that. And it just feels like such a cool story of like sticking it to the man of Franciscan.
Right.
And I mean, not to diminish how logistically difficult I'm sure that is, but to be willing to be like, no, like, this is not okay.
Right.
I'm not just going to like bow my head and do what I have to do.
Right.
And now you can talk about it.
Exactly.
And now you can share about it. And that's really powerful, because I just feel like there should be accountability to
100%
multiple people along that journey, but particularly that school.
Yes. I have really been reflecting on this lately, because I'm kind of stepping into like a new chapter of my life, where now, I mean, because even after withdrawing, I was living in a tiny little rural Ohio.
Steubenville,
Ohio, the Rust Belt of America.
Yeah, like, lovely.
Shut down steel mills. I mean, it was kind of a cute time.
Oh, I'm sure I'm sure it was charming in its way.
In its way. But I mean, I'm like still running into people who hate my guts at the grocery store. Being here is just like a total weight lifted. We also were not planning to move to LA this soon. This just kind of happened. But
you're here with Katie, who don't know.
Yes. Katie
and I recently moved to LA.
We did, like 2 weeks ago. But so I am like kind of stepping into this new space where it just does not occupy as much of my brain as it did anymore. And so there is a part of me that's still reaching back into that stuff to do things like talk about it on TikTok sometimes and like come on this podcast and like work on my book. But I do really see myself coming to a stage when my book is done, like I'm kind of moving on. But I think that these things are important to talk about, not just because I want to air my grievances with everyone. That's not really the point. But because I'm hearing from more and more people as I talk about these things about people having similar toxic experiences. And it feels so isolating when you feel like you're the only person going through it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think it's important to speak to these things, like to speak to what you talk about on Girls Camp and to
have places where you realize that other people felt the same way about things that they went through, because I think that it can feel very isolating to leave
totally.
A high demand religion. You purposely insulate yourself. You don't really have a lot of contact with people outside of your high control group. And then all of a sudden you don't have a lot of contact with people in it anymore. And you're just like left
yeah.
to figure it out.
It's scary. Yeah.
So it's important to
speak to
these things.
I appreciate that so much. I also appreciate in your story that there's leaving a high control group like Mormonism or fundamental Catholicism. And then there's also these really logistical aspects of you went to a school that now you're going to have to make up credits. You yes. lost money.
Yes.
You were, quite frankly, intentionally intimidated by an authority figure at your school. I think those are really important pieces to speak to as well. And part of what I hope to do on this podcast, because not that leaving a religion, a high demand religion, is easy anyway.
Right.
But I think sometimes people forget there's these added layers. I talk to people all the time in my DMs who are at BYU, and they're like, I have to finish my degree here. I have to. They literally don't have options to finish their degree elsewhere. And they are being essentially, in my mind, coerced into staying in the church
right.
or hiding their gayness, et cetera, because they are logistically now in this situation. And
right.
people will say, well, you chose to go to BYU. You chose to go to Franciscan.
Right.
I just don't think it's right to hold people hostage to faith or a sexual identity that when they entered the school, that's where they were.
Right.
Because people change.
Yeah. And like, that's the time of your life
exactly.
when people go through changes.
Exactly.
People have accused, oh my gosh, we were kind of talking about this, Reddit. I love reading my Reddit threads about myself.
Oh,
I know you've said I am so entertained by them. But people have said like that I'm like a grifter. I'm like, guys, my entire brand, like I had built up my platform on Catholicism.
Yeah.
I had speaking opportunities. I had youth ministry position opportunities. I had like my whole entire life within Catholicism. If I was going based off of what was like profitable for my
yes.
channel, it was not leaving the church.
Yes. What did I stand to gain? That's so funny you mentioned that, because I just saw a comment yesterday. I was scrolling late at night and someone commented, I just did an event for Girls Camp, and it was like a ticketed event.
Yeah.
In full transparency, I did not make that much money. Like I probably covered like the cost of my time.
Yeah.
But even if I made a good amount of money, I think I deserve to make money because it was a lot of work and time
right.
and creative energy and coordinating, et cetera, et cetera. However, this person commented and they tagged their friend and they were like, at so-and-so, low-key jealous of people who are profiting off of people leaving the church, like laugh face.
Right.
And I was like, oh, the irony. So ironic on so many levels. A, it's just like no one's gonna leave the church of their youth so they can like make money.
Right.
That's just not
right.
why people are leaving religion or high demand groups, etc. And also just the irony, because churches are massively wealthy and they have lots of resources and they
correct.
Ask people to pay in order to ensure their own salvation. So who's the people actually profiting off of manipulation, as opposed to someone maybe making some money by putting a lot of work and energy into creating communities? Oftentimes,
right.
at the cost of being verbally attacked at every turn.
Exactly.
And I'm sure you feel that way too, because
yeah.
you were doing it publicly and now you're doing this publicly, and people always want to find a way to discount it. And something I think easy to say is, well, they just want to make some money.
Right.
And it's like, there's easier to ways to make money. I
far
promise.
Far easier ways. I'm also in social work. So
yeah.
none of the choices I'm making in my life are motivated
motivated by profit. Honestly. I feel like we could talk forever more. Thank you so, so much
for
what you do generally and for coming on the podcast. Like I said, I'm just so impressed by you and I love the things that you're doing. I'm so excited for you in this new chapter. I just can't think of anything more exciting than being here with your girlfriend in LA. What a good place to,
such a good time.
You know, have this next thing. So thank you so much for being here. And if you want to find Evelyn on, are you the same on TikTok and Instagram, your handle?
Instagram is written by Ev.
Written by Ev.
I do more of my like writing stuff over there.
Got it. And then TikTok is life.
The life of
Ev. The life of Ev.
Yeah.
And I'll just tag you on when we post and stuff. So go find Evelyn. She's sharing so many good things and your book is coming up.
Oh.
Can't wait.
Some point.
Some point. Thank you. Thank you for being here. And thank you everyone for listening. Bye. G-I-